From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Yes, I have my voice back. How about that? Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. On this Monday, August 22nd, 2016, I trust that you all had one fabulous weekend. I know I sure did, but I'm ready to get back in the saddle here and talk sports. We've got a ton to recap from the weekend that was in the local sporting world and beyond. Of course, the Olympic Games are finito. That's right, a wrap in the books. The closing ceremony took place out in Rio de Janeiro. The Summer Games coming to a close. We will bring to you our final thoughts from what has taken place the last 2 weeks at the Summer Olympic Games, some of our most memorable moments, and what to look forward to in Tokyo 4 years from now. Also, the Associated Press preseason college football poll has been released. You'll find out where Michigan State and U of M stacks up on that list, and we'll have some interesting debate centered around that. Also, we will invite to the show Tim Hightower, running back for the NFL's New Orleans Saints, as Tim will provide insight as to what it's like to be a player during training camp the weeks leading up to the regular season in the NFL. It's a dog-eat-dog world, and Tim is going to give us insight on that. And on the back end of the show, we'll talk about the Detroit Tigers splitting against the Boston Red Sox, and we, of course, will have weekend winners for you. All of that and so much more. Call in to be a part of today's Current Sports. You know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know how we start this party. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. All right, folks, I'm sure you've heard by now. American boxer Clarissa Shields, that's right, Flint's own, has successfully defended her London 2012 gold medal in the women's middleweight division, beating Netherlands' Nochuka Fotinji in a unanimous decision on Sunday. Shields also becomes the first U.S. boxer, male or female, to win two Olympic gold medals. How crazy is that, right? As for what her plans are now, Shields says she's just ready to get back home to Flint. Quote, I just want to go home and see my mom. I haven't seen my mom in 4 months. I want to see my sister and my little brother. And get this, folks. Current Sports will be in the house out in Flint Town tomorrow afternoon when she makes that return. Keep it locked to WKAR.org for the story. Former Saginaw High Michigan State star Draymond Green became the second athlete from Saginaw and third basketball player from Michigan State University to bring home a gold medal. Green scored 2 points on Sunday in the United States' 96-66 win over Serbia in the men's basketball gold medal game out in Rio. Green now joins Magic Johnson and Steve Smith, Johnson in 1992, Smith in 2000, as former MSU men's basketball players with gold medals. He follows Serena Williams as the second athlete from Sag Nasty out in Saginaw to win Olympic gold. If you remember, Williams was born in Saginaw and moved to Compton, California when she was just 3 years old. All right, the Associated Press preseason college football poll has been released. Michigan sits at number 7. Michigan State chimes in at number 12. This is Michigan's first top 10 ranking in the AP poll since the preseason poll in the 2012 season when U of M was ranked number 8 before losing to Alabama. Before that, the previous time in the top 10 was the preseason poll entering the 2007 year when U of M was number 5 before losing to Appalachian State. Now, the Spartans were ranked in the top 10 all of last year except just 1 week, reaching number 2 in September and finishing at number 6 following the college football playoff loss to Alabama. MSU is the only team in the country to finish in the top 6 of the final poll the past 3 years. Max Redfield has been kicked off of Notre Dame's college football team, and Devin Butler has been suspended indefinitely. Coach Brian Kelly released that in a statement on Sunday afternoon. Redfield, a senior safety, was one of six Irish football players arrested over the weekend in two separate incidents. Four other players, Davion Coney, Kevin Steferson, Dexter Williams, and Ashton White, along with Redfield, they were arrested on Friday and booked in Fulton County, Indiana jail on misdemeanor charges of possession of marijuana after a traffic stop. Redfield, Steverson, and Williams also were charged with possession of a handgun without a license, according to Indiana State Police. Redfield, a senior who was expected to start safety this season, was sent home from the Fiesta Bowl, if you remember, last year for violating team rules. The Michigan State women's soccer team wrapped up its opening weekend debut with a 1-0 victory over Baylor University on Sunday afternoon at DeMartin Stadium. The Spartans found themselves with two corner kicks in the first half, but could only generate two shots compared to Baylor's six. However, the Michigan State backline pressure prevailed, and goalkeeper senior Caitlin Collin recorded four saves in the half. Michigan State will travel to number 4 Virginia on Thursday, and kickoff time is slated for 7 p.m. The Detroit Tigers, Justin Upton, denied a potential game-tying run by Comerica Park's deep center field Saturday night, put a pair of 3-run homers into left field seats Sunday afternoon, and powered the Tigers to a 4-game series split against the Boston Red Sox in a 10-5 win yesterday. The win kept the D 7 games behind Cleveland in the American League Central. Boston remained a half game behind Toronto for the AL East lead. Now, the Tigers brought back Cameron Maben from the DL ahead of schedule on Sunday morning, activating him after he looked good against live pitching in a simulated game. Detroit enjoys an off day today before hitting the road for a 3-game series at Target Field beginning on Tuesday with an 8:10 p.m. Eastern Time matchup against the Minnesota Twins. Anibal Sanchez, who is 6-12 on the year, a 5.94 ERA, he will make the start trying to follow up on his no-hit bid. And also, an injury update concerning Detroit Lions tight end Eric Ebron. Ebron did not take part in yesterday's hour-long practice, but he was on the field walking through blocking drills for the first time since he hurt his ankle on August 6th. After practice, he jogged across the field, spent a few minutes catching balls from a jugs machine. Before today, Ebron had not run or caught passes publicly since he was carted off for field with an ankle injury he suffered in the Detroit Lions' mock game. And last, but certainly not least, what a fight it was, folks. Conor McGregor, he got his revenge. Now he wants a third fight on his terms. McGregor evened the score in his rivalry with Nate Diaz by outpointing him, I should say, on Saturday night at UFC 202 in a rematch of their two-round welterweight thriller, which took place back in March. The two put on an action-packed fight in which McGregor came out strong and then hung on in a tiring, bloody slugfest. Two of the judges scored it 48-47 for McGregor, and the other had it 47-47 all. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Without further ado, let's start the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, after 5 rounds, we go to the judges' scorecards for a decision. Jeff Moen scores the contest, 48-47, McGregor. Glenn Kroemer scores it, 47-47. And Derek Clearly scores it, 48-47, for the winner by majority decision, the notorious Conor McGregor!
Yeah, damn right it was, but he took them better than I expected. He didn't show, he didn't let me know. I got the first three rounds. I proved the class difference. I just didn't have a level to him, but then that toughness and that durability that he has crept back in the later rounds, but I'm still happy to come away to win. It's a hell of a fight. He's a hell of a competitor. Brian was the best of me.
It seemed like there was a time in the fight where you started to slow down, but then you caught a second win. Is that around the fourth round?
Yeah, I dropped him in the third round, and then at the end of the third, he started loading up. But I just stayed calm with it. I didn't exchange back with him. I just bounced the shoulders off the shots off the shoulders, made my eggs out there, and then reset for the next round. I like my coach says, we win or we learn. I learned from the last contest.
This was an incredibly close and incredibly entertaining fight, a true dogfight, Conor. Congratulations on winning this rematch.
Thank you so much. All I know is it's 1-1. Regroup, boy, we'll do it again. This time at 155 pounds. I came up to 170, faced the bigger man, overcame my adversity. Now you want this trilogy? It's on my terms. Come back down to 155, we'll do it.
Congratulations.
Yes, and that is how we start this afternoon's Current Sports. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. I am your host, Al Martin. I am back in the saddle after taking a one-day absence on Friday to attend a funeral back in Detroit. Thanks so much to Isaac and Drew Henderson for holding down the fort. Good to be back, though, folks. Good to be back. It won't last long, though, because I tell you, at the end of the week, both myself and Isaac will be taking our final getaway for the summer months. I'll be actually a groomsman in the wedding of my fraternity brother out in the Dominican Republic. Yeah, I haven't been out the country since I was about 7 years old. A lot of people don't know this, but my mom, she's born and raised out in Trinidad and Tobago. I am half Indian, and that's the trip I took when I was 7 years old to go see my family on my mom's side when I was 7 years old, and I have not been out of the country since. So this should be an interesting trip for me. I'll be out until, let's see, I leave on Thursday. I'll be back on September 1st. We'll be doing live shows until Wednesday. We'll have three pre-records, and then Isaac will be hosting up until the 1st, and then I will be back hosting Current Sports on the opening night of the Michigan State college football year on September 2nd when Michigan State opens the year against Furman. And a big week, though. It's bittersweet for me because on Thursday, high school football starts in the area. How cool is that? I mean, man, the summer is pretty much gone now, right? I mean, high school football starts on Thursday, folks. Crazy, crazy stuff. So we'll get you prepped in the next 2 days for the start of high school football and so much more. So we'll go out with the bang before taking a brief hiatus. But was there any other way to start today's show? Now folks, there was a lot that took place this weekend in sports. I get it. Rio de Janeiro, you know, the final weekend of the Olympic Games, the closing ceremony took place last night. I caught a bit of it. It was a fun time. The Detroit Tigers getting a split against Boston as they are just reeling, if you ask me, at this moment. But the most intriguing moment that I saw in sports took place yesterday. Isaac and myself, we came in a bit early because the interview that you're going to hear in about 15 minutes, Tim Hightower, running back of the NFL's New Orleans Saints. Tim, we had to set up that interview for actually Sunday, yesterday, because Tim wasn't available today at 1:30 to do it live on our airwaves. So we had to come in at 10 a.m. yesterday to pre-record it. Now, after that was said and done, Isaac, he found the Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz UFC Part 2 fight online. So Isaac came up with a brilliant idea, because he's a brilliant man, to why not just go down the hall to our WKAR kitchen and put it on the HDMI and check it out before we, you know, leave for the Sunday afternoon, whatever we got to do on Sunday afternoon. So we put it on the tube. Man, we were just glued to our televisions, folks. Those that follow me on Snapchat, you saw us just kind of chilling out and watching that fight. And it was one of the most intriguing UFC bouts I've ever seen. I mean, these guys just went at it. Now, I know many of you out there are not fans of the sport. Many of you out there have an opinion that the sport is way too brutal, way too bloody. How can anyone watch something like that? But folks, hey, You can make the same argument when it comes to boxing. Maybe not as brutal as UFC, but these are still guys getting in between the ropes and trying to bash each other's brains in. That's the nature of the sport. And you got to respect these guys who are willing to put it all on the line, to risk everything, and be strapped in a cage and just go at it for 5 rounds of 5 minutes. I mean, that takes a lot of guts. So I respect, you know, and we've had different segments here on Current Sports. I remember when we had Ronald Mann on the show. Ronald Mann is a man who lost his leg in a motorcycle accident while serving our country as well. I mean, and you know, he's a big name in the world of MMA fighting here locally in mid-Michigan, as Ron DeLeon puts on these different fights throughout the year. And it's so interesting when you pick the brain of these guys, because they understand the risk when they get in the cage. And it's sort of like an addiction. I mean, it's just in their nature. Either you're born with that nature to be a fighter or you don't have it. Simple as that. So I respect those guys who put it out there on the line. But it was, again, one of the most intriguing bouts I have ever seen in any fighting realm between two men. I mean, these guys went at it. And Isaac and myself, we were sitting there because we knew what the result was. The fight took place on Saturday night. And actually, on my ESPN Streak for Cash, they had a prompt on there that, you know, who you think is going to win, Nate Diaz or Conor McGregor. And I chose McGregor because I just wanted to see a part three. I saw later that night, on Saturday night, that McGregor had won, but I didn't know how. All I saw on social media was that it was an epic fight, one for the ages. So we decided to put that to the test, and Isaac and I sat back on Sunday morning and watched it. And a fight for the ages may not even do it justice. It was that good, folks. And while watching it, though, I don't know if I agree with the outcome. And I think, Isaac, you can probably echo these sentiments. I gave the first two rounds, I gave the first round actually to Conor McGregor. Mm-hmm. I gave rounds 2, 3, 4, and 5 all to Nate Diaz. Yet McGregor pulled out that win. And according to your scorecard, you actually had McGregor winning the first round. You had McGregor winning the second, but Diaz taking the last three. And we were sitting there kind of puzzled as to how McGregor pulled that out. And that's one of the reasons why, Isaac, and I must say this as well. It's one of the reasons why my fandom for the world of boxing has been a bit dismissive over the years. I've seen so many fights where, you, according to the scorecard, when it comes down to a decision and no one gets knocked out, when it goes down to the wire and we're forced to rely on the judges to you know, herald a victor, I've seen it happen so many times where the judges have completely gotten it wrong. And, you know, I can't help but think there's so much corruption in the world of boxing that it really just turned me off, and many of our listeners just off from the sport, where to the point where we don't even watch it anymore. And I just didn't understand how they could give that fight to McGregor, but only from the standpoint as, let's see fight number three, because this fight, even though, you know, I gave the last three to Diaz, the last four, I should say, to Diaz, and you gave the last three to Diaz, this was a fight that was closer than that. I mean, these guys went at it, and the judges want to see a part three. The fans want to see a part three because this fight did numbers. When you look at the pay-per-view, earnings, I mean, this fight did numbers. Just imagine what fight number three would do.
Nothing in the world of combat has touched this recently, and nothing will for a little while until it is the trilogy fight of this series. But I'm going to have to go back on my word, because initially I did give the first two to McGregor, the next three to Diaz. And both you and I, Al, like you said, our fandom for the UFC and MMA type sports, it's limited. We enjoy them, mm-hmm. but we're not avid followers or anything like that. So I came out of that thinking, well, McGregor certainly won the first two, but Diaz dominated him in the following three. So I called my brother, who is a diehard proponent of the sport. He knows every fact. He's done his research back to the early 2000s of fighting history. Mm. And my brother said, are you kidding me? It was obviously McGregor. And so here's how the scoring system works, for those who don't know. For a successful win in a round, you get 10 points. For a loss in a round, you get 9 points. Mm-hmm. However,
it's like
somebody...
Yeah.
Exactly. However, if somebody is totally dominated in a round, if there's a clear victor and a clear loser, and there's no debate, no two ways about it, then the loser only gets 8 points. So one judge actually scored the third round, where Nate Diaz made quite the comeback, went from lethargy to immediate action and just choked McGregor out that entire round. One judge scored that 10-8. But the thing is, it's not about the style, because Diaz has much more of a street fighter style. He likes pinning you up against the corner, things like that. McGregor is very tactical, as you can tell. He planned out this entire thing like an army sergeant going into battle. That's how he did it. And McGregor was able to successfully counterattack and land more clean punches than Diaz, even in round four. So although Diaz had McGregor trapped and pinned and hanging against the wall for most of round four, McGregor defended himself. He was able to shield and parry most of Diaz's onslaught of punches. And because of that, McGregor was able to get clean counter shots. So what my brother said is, I agree with you on the first two rounds, but rewatch round four. Because although it looks as if McGregor is completely boxed in, he was able to make clean contact on his strikes, whereas Diaz was simply hitting McGregor time and time again, but he wasn't able to really break through McGregor's outer shield. And that's why the judges scored in favor of McGregor. I haven't been able to rewatch it yet, but under that logic, I can see how the fight might go to McGregor.
Okay, I'm going to have to rewatch round four because I thought that Diaz may have had it. But, hey, who knows? And that's the thing about the fight game. A lot of people don't understand it, like myself, when it comes to the scoring. Anything could happen. But, I mean, the thing is, it's so interesting because rarely do you see a fight of this magnitude in the world of boxing. And it's one of the big reasons why UFC is really taking over the fighting world. I mean, now that Floyd Mayweather's gone now, I'm sitting there saying to myself, okay, what fighter out there would I pay to watch now? You know what I mean? And maybe, you know, I brought up yesterday how when we were leaving the station, Tyson Fury. I mean, Tyson Fury is the new heavyweight now. He beat, you know, the Klitschko brothers are no more now. Tyson was able to get the belt from one of the Klitschko brothers. And I'm sitting there saying, okay, well, who's out there for Tyson Fury to fight? You know what I mean? So there's so many different, you know, conversations we can have. And I just think UFC, though, they're doing a great job marketing-wise in grabbing people's attention. And, you know, I saw people that don't even know anything about fighting or are not a casual fan of boxing, let alone UFC, interested in what took place in this fight. So I'm curious. I want to know what our listeners, I want to turn the mic over to you guys. I mean, you know, with watching what took place between Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor and looking at the history of UFC up until now, do you think the UFC has a chance to be a thing, a legit thing, here in the United States of America? Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, how about we recap the Olympic Games? They are in the books. The closing ceremony took place last night, and it was culminated with, of course, a really cool, you know, logo of Tokyo at the end saying, hey, we'll see you in 2020. At Tokyo. So it feels like these 2 weeks have flown by. So here are a few of our takeaways from the Olympic Games out in Rio de Janeiro. Yes, that's the last time you will hear that music here on Current Sports for quite some time, I should say. So, most memorable moments from the Olympic Games. It was 16 days of complete fun and a bit of drama sprinkled in here and there as well. For me, just a few moments here. Michael Phelps, of course, 23 gold medals. Absolutely just dominant. And, you know, it's so interesting watching this run for Michael Phelps, because this is a guy who, when looking at recent history here, just a few years back, I mean, this is a guy who was going through the DUI and speeding on the road, and he went to rehab, and everyone was wondering whether or not he'll get back in the pool, and, you know, he had gotten totally out of shape. But what happens? You know, he just puts his nose to the grindstone, goes to rehab, completely changes his life. He gets engaged, has a baby, gets back on the right track, gets back in shape, back in the pool, and it's like the dude totally has not missed a beat. And, you know, it's crazy because everyone's talking about how Michael Phelps is slated to retire now, But hey, hold your horses. I mean, I still think there's a slight possibility that we may see Michael Phelps out in Tokyo. I mean, why not? I mean, the guy was so dominant this year that, you know, why stop? See if you can get a few more gold medals. Why not? Why stop at 23 golds, right? So it was intriguing watching Michael Phelps and then Katie Ledecky as well. Katie Ledecky was just absolutely, I mean, you would see some races with Katie Ledecky where it was just like, okay, where is the competition? I can't even see the competition in the screen. Where is everybody at? So that was fun to watch as well. For me, probably my favorite athlete to watch out of these entire Olympic Games had to be Simone Biles. And I want to explain this because, don't get me wrong, Michael Phelps, fantastic. Usain Bolt with the whole triple thing. I mean, at unbelievable moments, right? What intrigues me so much, and I never thought I'd say this about a sport like gymnastics, but what intrigues me so much about gymnastics is that you have, the best of the best on the Olympic stage competing in a sport where every routine is different. You know, every flip is just a bit different. Where when you're watching swimming, everyone's pretty much doing the same thing. Everybody's doing the butterfly. Everybody's got the same motion going on. Just someone's doing it faster than another athlete. Same thing with running. I mean, everyone's got this, you know, everyone's running the same. Just someone's doing it faster. In gymnastics, it's so much more appealing to my eye, at least, because you have a variances of moves being done individually by different athletes. I mean, you know, Simone Biles' routine, no one would even attempt to do her routine because it was virtually impossible for anyone else to do it. She would do things, she took on the hardest routines and would nail them. No one would even dare doing, and she even had a name named after her, a move named after her during her floor exercise called the Biles. And it's, you know, it's this crazy thing where she does like a half twist and does all these backflips. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable. So to me, Simone Biles, who they call the Michael Jordan of gymnastics, was my favorite athlete. 4 gold, 1 bronze in these Olympic Games, and she has many more coming down the pike at Tokyo. So those are a few of my takeaways, folks. Isaac, favorite moments for you?
Is it okay if I'm a pessimist today? Is that all right?
No, that's fine, man. Okay, if you want to start off on a grumpy mood on a Monday, hey, you're totally in your right to do so.
That's what I figure. So I'm just going to rant for a few minutes. First of all, Ryan Lochte, absolute embarrassment during the games.
I knew it. See, I was trying not to bring it up, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, but people are saying this shouldn't detract from the accomplishments of other athletes. Of course it shouldn't. But let me tell you why, as media members, we are so fascinated by this storyline. Because we have never heard of any sort of lie saga like this before in our entire lives. Mm-hmm. We have never heard of a person claiming to be robbed at gunpoint, claiming to have the crown of a gun placed upon their forehead. That's a very memorable, distinct description. And then he was like, whatever, which is my favorite part of the story. But he goes on from that. He's got white hair. He comes back. He does another interview with Matt Lauer, corrects himself, redyes the hair.
And I want to stop right there real quick. I got to comment on that, Isaac, because I could not help but think about this, dude, especially living in the society that we do here in America, where we hear stories left and right about the racial disparity in comparison to different ethnicities. Ryan Lochte redyeing his hair. I couldn't help but imagine, but think about how the storyline would play out if this were a black guy. If this were
Odell Beckham Jr. with his curls.
Exactly. Or if this was Usain Bolt out there at the Olympics and he did something of this nature, do you know how different the coverage and the conversation would be if it was someone other than a guy like Ryan Lochte?
Yeah.
I mean, if it was a black guy, you better believe. I keep it real here. You better believe the storyline would have been totally different.
Hard to envision, yeah. No, yeah. You're right. Oh, it's a weird thing to sort of imagine. But
he redyes his hair from silver to brown or whatever it was, to appeal, you know, to make himself
to
look,
the mainstream population.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, to make him not look like this radical, crazy dude. And by the way, Ryan Lochte's in his 30s, by the way. This whole dialogue about it, you know, kids being kids. No, this dude's a grown man.
Exactly. So, and grown up. I never used to lie. I thought it was immoral. I thought that I'd be smited. I was a great kid. Then I realized as time went on, you know what? If I say, oh, I'm sorry I'm late. I forgot my homework, but my car broke down. I realized that's a white lie. It's a little fib. It's not going to hurt anybody. So you start throwing in the white lies. This isn't a white lie. This is a big deal. I'm happy to hear that Speedo cut him from his contract. They deserve to. This is utterly ridiculous. We should not be talking about it, but we are just because of how bizarre, how unconventional, and how stupid Ryan Lochte was. We should be talking about it. The other thing that I'm going to rant about real quick, and I'll let you get on with it, but USA Men's Basketball. Can we stop acting like this is an accomplishment? It is the standard. It is hackneyed. If they did anything besides this, this is a gold medal for the rest of the world. For Serbia making a 30-point game, they deserve a gold medal. USA Basketball, the country where USA Basketball was invented, should be winning every single game by 50-plus points. This was disappointing. It wasn't anything special. And basketball needs to adopt a similar format to soccer in the Olympics, where it's only 21 and under, and then you have designated players who are above that age. But for USA Basketball to act like they won something, all these players saying, this is as good as a championship, like Carmelo Anthony. No, shut up. You say that because you're not good enough to win a championship in the NBA. This is nothing. This is an Olympic gold medal in a one-dominated sport in a monopoly. No, this was nothing. That's my rant for the day.
Okay, Isaac Kastens, folks, ranting on two of the hot button issues out in Rio. And I, you know, going back to, I'll let the Olympic music play out here. Because before we hit this first break, I want to address what you said about the Olympic men's basketball team. And I agree with you 100% here, Isaac. And first of all, I will say this though. I do think it's special because again, you are representing your country. There is a sort of moxie that comes with that. I mean, it's not every day where you get to represent your country in a sport and claim that you are the best in the world to do what you do. But again, evaluating the reactions by some of these players, like a Carmelo Anthony, like a DeAndre Jordan, who are so emotional about this and who have made comments that this is, you know, have made comments alluding that this is on the same level or even more important than an NBA championship is absolutely ludicrous and a bit delusional, if you ask me. It sounds like two guys who are trying to validate their respective basketball careers because they won a gold medal. Like you said, Isaac, when you represent the United States of America in the world of basketball, male or female, you are expected to win a gold medal. It is a disappointment if you do not do that. And the fact, you know, looking at yesterday's game against Serbia, I mean, they blew them out by, 30 points? You know what I mean? And again, they and we had Deshaun Tate here on the show of, you know, of CBS Radio in Atlanta, Georgia. And Deshaun talked about how he didn't think that the U.S. would coast to a gold medal. And I argued on the contrary that I said that they would coast to a gold medal. He said that he didn't think it was going to be that easy. And it turned out it wasn't that easy because, you know, there was a lot of hero ball going on and so forth. But at the same time, they did win another gold medal. You know, it's back-to-back-to-back years now, dating back to 2008, that the U.S. has won a gold medal. But it just really, I chuckled when Carmelo Anthony went up on his interview and got so emotional about winning a gold medal when he talked about the sacrifice that all of his teammates have to make when it comes to their respective families and going out overseas and making this happen. And it just seems to me that this is a guy, you know, and same thing could be said for DeAndre Jordan. These are two guys who have never sniffed an NBA championship, let alone won one. These are two guys who are trying to make it seem like they've done something of equal importance by going out there and winning a gold for the United States of America, which is absolutely crazy to me. And I think it's one of the reasons why Carmelo Anthony will never win an NBA championship in the National Basketball Association, okay? And it just really disheartened me because this is a guy in Melo where he has so much talent, one of the most talented basketball players we have ever seen, but just cannot play within a system. He just can't play within a system. And you have to be able to mesh your game in a system if you want to get close to winning an NBA championship. So it was just funny to me. And you didn't even have the best basketball player in the world competing overseas in LeBron James. So I don't know. I feel you 100% on that. And Ryan Lochte is a complete idiot. And I really do think that even though Brazil has not, you know, held him to the fire when it comes to this whole situation, something's going to be done when it comes to the International Olympic Committee and making sure that Ryan Lochte does pay to a degree for what he caused out there in Rio, because it was something crazy. And if anything, the people of Rio are the ones that should be really upset about this, because they, you know, and I must give them credit for this. If anything, we've talked about the political unrest. We've talked about the whole situation with the water pollution. We've just talked about the mess that is currently going on out in Rio de Janeiro. But I was very impressed how, for the most part, there was nothing big. There was no disaster that took place out in Rio de Janeiro, because I was a bit worried maybe there may be some terrorist threat or a terrorist attack, because there have been so many things happening in our world. But the games went off pretty much without a hiccup, to be honest with you.
And when's the last time you heard the word Zika? It's been a while. It didn't even cross people's mind during the games.
It didn't. I was very impressed with how things went for the most part. Rio still has its troubles, don't get me wrong. But for the most part, I think they performed above average when talking about just making sure they have a drama-free games, with the exception of the name Ryan Lochte. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will roll in an interview with New Orleans Saints running back Tim Hightower. Tim will give us an insight on what it's like to try and compete for that 53-man roster in NFL training camp. That and so much more. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We got a treat to close out our show. I got the chance to chat with Tim Hightower, running back of the New Orleans Saints, yesterday. So it's a pre-tape interview that we're bringing to you for the first time on our airwaves today. Tim Hightower is a man who's had an interesting NFL career. He was drafted by the Arizona Cardinals, and he went through a stint where he got injured. He took 4 years away from the game, got back in the game with the New Orleans Saints. Got a few opportunities to start with the team last season, and now he's trying to compete for a spot on that 53-man roster. So I first had to start off by asking Tim, does he enjoy this time of the year trying to compete for basically his NFL livelihood? Here we go.
Do you enjoy it? That's a good question. you know, honestly, I don't know if anyone quite enjoys training camp. You enjoy football. You enjoy the time with your team. You enjoy the competition. But I think training camp is just a grind. I don't know if you're supposed to enjoy. And I could be wrong. You know, I don't know if you necessarily enjoy it. It's just a grind. It's a grind. It could be a grind mentally and physically. And you know, it's supposed to. You got to get ready for a long season. You got to cut a roster down from 90 to 53. You got to see what kind of team identity you have. So it's not going to be pretty. There's no easy way to do it. So, you know, there are some great things to it, and you understand the process. But it definitely is one of those things where guys are definitely, you know, after that second week, you're definitely ready for the regular season to start.
Yeah, no, it's so interesting, Tim, because I'm a big fan of HBO's Hard Knocks, where they just pick a team throughout training camp leading up to the NFL regular season. And you get to kind of see, you get kind of an inside look into what goes down throughout an NFL training camp, watching that roster dwindle down from 90 to 53. And you see a lot of guys get cut. And it's so disheartening at times, because it really puts in perspective how much of a dog-eat-dog world it is. You talked about that grind mentally and physically for you. I mean, what is that like when you see, you know, dudes that you've established a friendship with get cut and have to go back to their normal lives and really reevaluate where they want to go with this football thing? I mean, that's got to be disheartening to a certain point.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, you don't get numb to it, but I think that everyone understands the nature of this business. And not that it makes it any easier, but we all understand why we're here. You know, we all have a unique opportunity. And I think everyone understands why we're ultimately here. And, you know, and at times, you know, you'll form lifetime friendships with some of the guys. But at the end of the day, the majority of them, that locker room is the last time you'll see a lot of these guys. So again, it's one of those unspoken things that I don't think people really realize the pressure and the type of performance that's required on a daily basis. You know, it's not just about the game. You know, you're being evaluated during training camp every single day. Coaches are having meetings every single day, and they're evaluating the guy. Hey, is this the right guy? Do we need to bring another guy in? Every single play, every single day, it's an evaluation, and you understand that. And like I said, I think guys, as long as you play this game, you understand what this business is about.
Tim, how do you deal with this time of the year? How do you deal with that pressure?
You know what? Before coming into the season, you have goals. For me, I have goals. I have things that I want to focus on. I have, you know, going through all season, you know, watching last year's film and, you know, sitting down with the coaching staff, watching yourself. And you have goals and you have things that you know that you personally want to work on and improve on. And it's hard sometimes to not stay focused on that and kind of look at what other people are doing or get caught up, you know, if you have one good day of practice, one bad day of practice, one good or bad game. But just to stay focused and stay true to the things that you're going to work on and stay true to your development as an individual person, how your role kind of ties into this team. And then from there, just having a balance of downtime. For me, it's family. You know, when I'm not, you know, when I'm not out there getting a chance to FaceTime the kids and talk to the family and kind of read a book, get your mind away from it as much as you can when you're not on that field.
Yeah, certainly. And Tim, you know, looking at last year for you, and I'm going to get to the four-year gap in just a minute, but, you know, after 4 years away from the NFL, you signed a contract with the New Orleans Saints, and you got some pretty cool opportunities last year with this team. When you evaluate your time in the league thus far, and again, last year you signed a one-year $745,000 contract at the veteran minimum. When you evaluate, you know, that four-year gap and being thrown back into the fire trying to make the NFL roster, what has this journey been like for you leading up to this 2016 season?
It's been all over the place. It's definitely been one that's testing me emotionally, physically. It's testing me in every single way. But you know what? I'm proud of it. It's my journey, and you know, and I own it, and I'm proud of it just because I understand the situation that I'm in. This game is hard enough to play healthy. It's hard enough to play, you know, when you're young, when you're old. There's a limited amount of opportunities. And the fact that I was away for so long and had an opportunity to come back and then, let alone, had an opportunity to start at the end of last year, and to give me another opportunity to come back this year, I understand that doesn't just happen every single day. So I understand the rare opportunity. And, you know, there's something that the coaching staff saw, you know, in me, and there's something that I was fortunate to be a part of. And, you know, I'm regardless of what did or hasn't happened, maybe this career hasn't, you know, played out maybe in the way that I would have drawn it out, but I still have a chance to do everything that I've set out to do, and, you know, and I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, and Tim, you received your first NFL start in over 4 years after Mark Ingram was placed on injured reserve. You finished the game, with a career high 28 carries, 85 rushing yards, and a touchdown with a win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then the next game, you played our beloved Detroit Lions and carried the ball a total of 13 times for 54 rushing yards, caught three passes for 31 receiving yards in a loss against the Lions. That's rare when the Detroit Lions pull out a game. I should say that here, Tim. Now for you, Tim. I got to go back to the gap now. Again, you took a four-year absence from the game and are trying to make a comeback to the league that dates back to, 2012 with the Washington Redskins. Why did you walk away from the game for 4 years, Tim?
I wish it was my choice. It wasn't. It was due to the injury. Due to sustaining the injury in Washington, you know, it just took a long time. My body just for the response. I worked relentlessly to get back to full health, and I just wasn't able to. And, you know, finding out that, I had some other complications with the surgery and the infections, and it was almost kind of one thing after another thing. And, you know, I would get to the point where I felt good enough to get back, you know, have opportunity to get back, and then, you know, my knee just wouldn't respond. So was one of the things I had to keep fighting. I had to keep fighting through it. But I knew that this was something that, hey, I still have football left in me. I know I still can do this because mentally I was still committed to that daily grind. I was still willing to go through whatever it took to get back. And, you know, I just kind of stuck with it. And fortunately, everything worked out.
And after that stint with the Redskins, Sam, what kind of injury was that led to that four-year gap?
Well, you know, I don't like to talk about a lot of injuries, but
right.
I tore my ACL, and just from there, the complications, I ended up having an infection in my knee, and that kind of went undetected, and it just kind of put some things, kind of slowed the rehab process down a lot.
Was there any point, Tim, when you thought about a plan B and maybe walking away from the game at all?
There are many points. There are many times I'm sitting there thinking, man, I'm you know, this is considered a young man's game. I'm getting older. What am I doing? You know, I got a family now. I got married, and now I have children. It's not just about me anymore. I can't just make decisions based off of what's best for Tim anymore. I got to think about some other people. So, you know, there are a lot of times, a lot of late nights. It challenged me. But I think in the same way that I talked about before training camp, I had goals. I wrote down goals before I was injured. I had goals, and I had a focus, and I had a vision that I was committed to. My wife, when she, you know, she came on board, she was committed to that vision, and my family and all the friends and the trainers, everyone was committed to that vision. And so I think everyone, you know, when I had those times where, you know, I'm thinking, hey, this may be it, those people kind of really rallied around me and pushed me and challenged me to, hey, stay true to what you said you were going to do and what you said that you wanted to accomplish. And, you know, I'm thankful and fortunate for those people.
I tell you, Tim, we are nothing without our support systems. Isn't that right?
Absolutely.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKER's Current Sports, we are chatting with running back of the New Orleans Saints, Mr. Tim Hightower, in his sixth season now. And, you know, Tim, during that time, you know, before you signed back with the New Orleans Saints, you actually played with the Florida Blacktips of the Fall Experimental Football League. For those like myself that don't know what the heck that league is all about, who are the Florida Blacktips?
You know what, to be honest, I still don't quite know who the Florida Blacktips are. I didn't really know much about the league, about the team. I just remember, all I knew is I wanted to play football. And, you know, going through the rehab and the surgeries, I needed to prove to myself that I could play football again. And a big part of that was mentally, you know, the confidence. You get so used to doing something at a high level to where it becomes second nature. You don't even think about it. There comes a certain confidence with that. And when you go through a sustained injury as such, it's almost like you got to rebuild yourself all over again. You got to learn how to walk again. You got, you know, but part of that is that confidence. You have to have that confidence that you can go out there, play at a high level, and not even think about it. I mean, your body just responds to it. And I needed that mental aspect. So it was one of those things where I'm like, hey, the opportunity came across itself. And I said, you know what? I want to play football again. Maybe this game will just help, you know, me validate the fact that, hey, I still can play football. The knee is good to go, that, you know, I still enjoy the game. And so I did it. You know, it was kind of a bit unorganized. And again, I really don't know much about the league. But I'm glad I did, because it's one of those things that I'll remember that that kind of defining moment for me.
Now, Tim, of course, the answer to this next question, no one has the real answer to this next question. But, you know, when you evaluate just the overall landscape, I should say, of the league, especially when it comes to running backs, I mean, the average career of a running back that enters the NFL is about 3 1/4 length of a career. When it comes to three years, I should say. When it comes to, you know, when you look at the overall career of a running back, I mean, what is the key to longevity at that position?
I think the key to longevity at anything in life is consistency. And being consistent. And what does it take for you to be you on a daily basis? You know, you're here, we're all here, we have all unique abilities, but what does it take for you to be you every single day? And it gets so easy to kind of, I don't feel like stretching again, or I don't feel like doing this, or I don't feel like, and then it's every single time you make a decision, that affects you down the road, you know, and just watching me having the ability to see guys like Edgerrin James early on in my career, and the Larry Fitzgerald, and then see how much, how they approach taking care of their bodies and their craft, and, you know, whether it's staying after doing the little things after practice, whether it's even if they know the playbook, fine-tuning different aspects of the game mentally to keep themselves sharp, whether it's, you know, the different, having a different team of people around them to make sure that they're in top shape nutritionally and physically, and, you know, just being consistent with those things that help you, you know, go out there and be the best you can be, you know, figuring that out and then just doing it every single day and doing it every single day so that you can get consistent results over a consistent period of time. And I think really just being honing in on that routine or whatever routine that you find, and being committed to it and not compromising that at all.
Now, Tim, how close is that running back core out in New Orleans? I mean, guys like Luke McCown, of course, Mark Ingram, C.J. Spiller. I mean, are you guys, is it a family at the end of the day? But at the same time, you guys are trying to compete and are trying to compete for roster spots out there. I mean, what's that dynamic like between you all?
It's one of those unspoken things. You know, myself, Mark, C.J., I mean, it is Travis, your dad. They got a young guy, Daniel Lasco, and Marcus Murphy. It's a dynamic group, I'll tell you that much. It's as talented of a group as I've been around. But again, we're all competitive. So we compete when it comes to being on that field. When it comes to between those wide lines, you compete. You know that every single rep, every single time you're on the field, we're competing. But we don't allow it to carry off the field, you know, and that's one of those things that, is, you know, you leave what happens in between the white lines. And you get off that field, man, look, we're husbands, we're brothers, we're fathers, we're teammates, you know what I mean? And then we experience the same things, we enjoy some of the similar things, and that's what we do, you know, we enjoy life outside of the field. But again, we also understand that when we step on those fields, on that field is business, and we're here to work. So I think we have a unique group, man, and I, for the most part, no one really allows it to get in between us, and we understand what it is.
Without a doubt, and we're absolutely rooting for you, Tim. And before we get you out of here, I mean, what's the team looking like so far? I know you guys have had just two exhibition games right now, but how good can the New Orleans Saints be this upcoming season?
I hate to make predictions. I'm not a I have my own strong beliefs, man, but we got work to do. Any team could sit in and say, you know, we could be as good as we want to be, you know, but that, what does that really mean? So I think we're just really focused on improving every single day. We know the improvements we need to make. We know what we've seen on film and what we've seen in practice. And I think we're just committed to the process. We're committed to doing whatever it takes to be a great team and to be a consistently good team. And I think that's what our focus is.
Yeah, and for you, Tim, when you came into the league, I mean, you weren't invited to the 2008 NFL Combine, but you performed well at Richmond's Pro Day. You were considered, quote, one of the small school sleepers in the 2008 NFL draft. I mean, going through what you're going through right now, Tim, I mean, you've always sort of played with a chip on your shoulder, and this situation is sort of, it relates to that conversation as well. Am I right?
I don't think I could approach life any different at this point. I think that chip's gonna, I think that chip's embedded in my shoulder. It's probably gonna stay on my shoulder.
Without a doubt. And also, one quick note here. Of course, on a somber note, I know you all will be donning the 91 decal in honor of Will Smith. Smith spent 10 years in New Orleans. He was shot and killed, of course, after a traffic incident in April. He was 34 years old. I think that's a very cool way to honor, a guy like Will Smith this upcoming year for you guys. And emotions are high when discussing Will. But did you have a relationship with Will Smith at all, Tim?
I did not, you know, I got a chance to play against him, and just all the things that you hear about him, you know, from the players, and that's really what, you know, what's important. From the guys who share the locker room with him, his leadership, his passion, his work ethic, he defined what this game is about, you know, as far as a model for a veteran player. And, you know, we got a chance to meet his family at practice. And it's unfortunate. It's an unfortunate situation, man, to a wife and children have to, you know, grow up without a father. And but it's also good to see the respect, you know, in a small way, but to see that kind of respect for somebody who gave himself to the game of football and to this city, it means so much to the city of New Orleans. It's a great thing to see what they've done and how they're honoring his legacy.
Without a doubt. And I want to go out on a high note here, Tim. I mean, what do you love about the city of New Orleans? Because our engineer, actually, Isaac Constance, is born and raised in the NO. What do you love about the city?
Okay. You know what? It's so unique. I love the unique culture of this city. You can't fake it. You know you're in New Orleans. You know, you go down to Bourbon Street, or you go down to the French Quarter, you know, magazines, whatever it is, it's New Orleans. It doesn't look like any other place. It's its own place. I love the different people's accents. They talk about the food. I don't get much into the food. I kind of stick to my routine and my foods. But
right.
I just love the music and just the culture, man. It's just a unique place.
It definitely is, and I haven't been, but it's definitely on the docket to get down there. Well, I'll tell you what, Tim, we'll be rooting for you as we look at you and the team, of course, throughout preseason camp, and we're hoping that you make that 53-man roster, all right?
I appreciate it. Good talking to you.
All right, Tim Hightower, running back for the New Orleans Saints. Definitely rooting for Tim. Yeah, again, that was a pre-recorded interview that we recorded actually on Sunday, so yesterday with Tim. Due to scheduling differences, and Tim was a great interview, as you just heard. But, you know, just a really cool insight and a very candid insight into what it takes to try and make a 53-man roster in the NFL. And watching, you know, have you seen training camp with the L.A. Rams yet, Isaac?
I haven't tuned into this one, no.
You're missing out, dude. It's an unbelievable show. It's unbelievable every single year. But, you know, it's always intriguing to me just – how different players take the news that they won't be making that roster, because you put in so much work throughout training camp, and a lot of times that work does not pay dividends. So Tim is a man who, and it's really tough. I mean, he's playing a position where the shelf life of a running back is 3 years. That's it. He's already been 6 years in the league, but he took a four-year absence due to that injury that he mentioned. So the cards are stacked against him. They've been stacked against him, you know, his entire career, though, seeing as though he went to a small school out in Richmond and had to really prove himself. This is a guy who wasn't even invited to the combine, so he had to impress at his respective college's pro day. So I'm looking forward to seeing Tim out there. I know you're a New Orleans Saints fan, Isaac, because you were born and raised there. He hasn't been getting many touches, though, and it's really tough when you're competing against guys like Flint's own Mark Ingram, who was a Heisman Trophy winner.
Exactly, and that's the problem. New Orleans probably has three guys ahead of him at that spot right now, Tavares, Cadet, Mark Ingram, and C.J. Spiller. But with that being said, you need a fourth, you need a dependable veteran, and Tim Hightower definitely is that guy.
So true. All right, folks, well, unfortunately, we are out of time. On the next 2 days here on Current Sports, though, we will be getting you all ready for the start of high school football right here in mid-Michigan, all right? You are definitely going to want to tune in the next 2 days here before Isaac and myself bid you all adieu as we take our final vacation before we're back at it. So tune in the next 2 days, folks. We got some pretty cool stuff in store for you, including a special feature on the return of Clarissa Shields, female boxer from Flint, Michigan, who just won another gold medal. Keep it locked to WKAR.org, all right? Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic start to your week, and be easy, people.